Well, I'm not sure of your situation, but there are many communities, for instance, out in the West, that are quite close to one another. There would have to be some adjudicatory process. I think probably the commission that would be established here in the state rather than in Washington, D.C. But for instance, you know, when the control is in D.C., and if we would have decide, you know, that we would be better protected by the Interior Department, whose responsibility it is to essentially take care of the native people, we would have probably petitioned, as was done back in the 40s, you know, by many villages, for reservations. And to this very day, you'll find very few people in the villages who support the idea of reservations. They were propagandized against them, pretty much, because the administrators, I think Greening and others, felt that this wasn't the best thing for the natives. In fact, I looked at the records in Washington, D.C. in regard to Shungnak. Shungnak is quite near some very valuable copper deposits and other minerals. And they petitioned for a reservation. They had two hearings, one in Kotzebue and one in Shungnak. And well-meaning whites and prospectors opposed the granting of a reservation to the Shungnak people because they wanted the minerals. And naturally, Kennecott Copper has a hold of the mineral land there, back there behind Kobuk. I'm not sure how large the reserve would have been, but they fought and defeated the desire of the people, you know, for this reservation, which they weren't particularly interested in for minerals, although it would have been possible for them to obtain the benefits of the minerals if they had obtained the reservation. So now we have a major outside corporation a hold of it, with the native people not benefiting from it. But more than likely, most of the villages, if they obtained any amount of land, wouldn't really have any valuable lands, except a few might be on the North Slope. Well, yeah. Well, we couldn't possibly, I think, from a politically realistic standpoint, try to get villages that are now uninhabited. But the fact of the matter is, in many locations around the state, we have lands that are used certain months out of the year. For instance, I mentioned Sisolik, where many people from Kotzebue go to. It's simply a gravel spit, which is a very good hunting and fishing location. Almost all of people know it that come down there, and I'm sure there's other places like this. You know, if this were 1741, and if there were still 74 or 80,000 Eskimo, Indian, and Aleut people in the state, certainly we would, because we were more scattered in those days. We weren't located around the church or the school. We couldn't afford, from an ecological standpoint, to have large villages, because we were scattered in family groups all over the cotton picking territory of Alaska. And it wasn't too many years ago that there were many small groups of Eskimo people scattered throughout the North Slope, for instance. But now we have been consolidated because of mainly churches and schools and airports and other things. Thank you. I've taken too much time.
If this is a question at the center about is there some question of overlapping with Native and White Hats?
Well, I have the bill says in section 10 that these withdrawals are subject to valid existing rights.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't touch it.
Well, let me say.
Mrs.
Ms. Hitchcock, in terms of that particular point as to whether we're trying to claim land that already is held by others, we have never taken that opinion, you know, in our deliberations. When I was trying to get our region to understand the issue and what to do but to protect ourselves in terms of the disposition of lands that was just prior to the so-called freeze, The fact of the matter is, in all of those villages out there, at least in terms of the way we look at the public land law now, they were simply sitting on the public land, and anybody, you know, practically anybody could have gone to a BLM office in Fairbanks and looked down there. There was nothing on the maps, and so they would say, well, you know, I'd like this hunk of land here. They could have got half a Kotzebue, you know. And we don't know any of the dispositions that were going on. So what we were trying to do with these blanket claims, essentially, was to, in those areas where state selections were made, of course, to protest them. In the areas where there were no state selections, we were claiming them, at least the whole area of use and occupancy that we felt for that particular region. And my good friend, Edith Bullock, I wish she was here. She's unfortunately an executive committee member of the Chamber of Commerce. You know, we had great long discussions about this, and I was trying to inform her that, you know, were it any other, if it was poor whites, I'd be doing the same thing. Because I felt that these people had a right, in my reading of the law and understanding of it, that they had a right to protect themselves. And I wasn't trying to run anybody out of the country, nor were the other people. We figured if they had existing rights, they would be preserved. In fact, I'm quite sure we'd be more generous with them than the state would have been in the areas that the state has made selections. They've had big court cases right down here, haven't they? Where there were some poor homesteaders who were trying to homestead some land, and they had to fight the state. And I'm sure we'd be more than generous with the people. And we're not trying to take anybody's land. We're simply trying to confirm what is ours. Thank you. Well, let me tell you, from the very beginning, once the issue started going, it was all we could do to keep up with it, you know. And we have never been funded adequately, from our standpoint, to do an adequate job of informing our own people. It takes a lot of dough to get to a couple hundred villages. To get a person there, you know, it just can't be done by the, you know, we've sent, you know, a lot of paper, but the paper doesn't mean anything if you can't read it well and understand it all. And the things that we're dealing with are quite complex. What we tried to do, for instance, in the task force, was to try to take care of all of the contingencies and try to eliminate the major conflicts, you know, in this approach of working with the state. For instance, we had villages with reservations. With executive order reservations, some large, like 1.5 million acres up north, some small, down to a couple thousand acres. We had some groups that had filings before the Indian Claims Commission. We had some who had already gotten a settlement with no land, with a poor settlement.